I may not know that lot about math, but I know what a giraffe is, okay?
Jesus. Damn it, Diana.
A Hamiltonian path is a male giraffe that goes through all of the female giraffes in the pack.
He'll play
a... Yeah, I was saying, that's called a giraffe pimp.
No, a pimp would outsource the female giraffes and or male giraffes because we are equal opportunity for pimps here.
Yeah, now we're talking about Hamiltonian giraffes.
Isn't that what you said? Wait, is it not Hamiltonian pimps?
All right, I'm done with this conversation.
Hi, welcome to Brought to the Table. Again, you have me as your host for, I think, what, this three times now? Not in a row, but a while, because I don't want to do work, because I am the freeloader. With us today, we have Diana Schulberg and Scott, who are going to be talking about, well, either Hamiltonian giraffes or something with a musical. I'm not entirely sure yet. We had a large discussion about it that you may or may not get to hear. This being said, we have both of them discussing their topic, and I'm just going to be here to throw in a bit of humor here and there. So I'll let you two take it away. We're just starting wherever you want.
I don't really want to start after what has been said before. But yeah, we're going to be talking about the award-winning Broadway musical, Hamilton.
That does not involve giraffes.
It only involves giraffes slightly in the second act.
Oh, shoot.
Diana's like, man, I've seen this and I don't remember the giraffes.
Yeah, I don't remember the live giraffe part of the performance.
Listen, you went to the wrong Broadway performance.
That explains why they kept singing about the flag waving and letting the people sing and prisoner numbers.
And the circle of life and all that stuff.
See, now that's that joke I get. Diana, I'm kind of lost on yours.
Les Mis, sweetheart. Prisoner numbers.
Oh, you know me in musicals.
All right, now that we've made a bunch of obscure references that nobody understands. Yeah, Hamilton, award-winning Broadway musical. Like, literally all of the awards. If you haven't heard of it at this point, you probably don't like musicals, in which case you should probably stop listening to this podcast.
All right, bye.
Not just this episode. Don't listen to the podcast anymore. We hate you. Go away.
So hit unsubscribe and then personally message Carter telling him why you unsubscribed.
Yes.
Give me 2 seconds.
Diana, do you want to give a better overview than that of what Hamilton is?
Sure. So Mr. Lin-Manuel Miranda was one day walking along, reading this very sick biography about Mr. Hamilton. And he was like, guys, this would make a great musical. And so he wrote, directed, and starred in this absolutely stunning musical that literally has won every award. All of them. Just all of them.
There are no more awards. You can't win them.
Yeah, like WWE Wrestling, World Title, Chess Champion, all of them. A lot of it boiled down to him reading this biography and discovering a lot of things that were interesting and cool about this person who often, as one of the founding fathers, gets, I won't say shunted to the side, but not remembered as well as the likes of Mr. Washington. And so he wrote this fabulous musical, very innovative, very fun, and it essentially walks through the life and times of Mr. Alexander Hamilton. It started in New York, and it eventually grew to take over pretty much any stage. I know they're heading to London in like a week or two. They're everywhere.
So let's get this out of the way before we start talking about the actual musical. It is based on a true story in the same way that like Disney movies are based on a true story.
It's a little more accurate than that.
There are several accurate parts. There's lots of creative draw and dramatizations in there as well, like the whole thing with Angelica and a bunch of other things and a lot of the situations with Aaron Burr. So we're going to review it for its kind of content as a musical with some hints and some air quotes around the based on a true story. How many musicals are really historically accurate anyways?
Yeah, like as long as you go in with the open mind that this is a musical and not all musicals have to be accurate to the strongest T, and you don't think that every single thing that happened in this literally happened in real life, it's a fun time. It's a good time. And so we already know it's not historically accurate. We already know. Thank you for telling us. We already know.
But please tell us anyways. We want to know that you exist. Anyways, let's get started on the music, because that's all I really want to talk about. I've never seen the musical. I just listen to the music. Each song in Hamilton, of which there are so many, it's like 2 hours just of music. Like, if you play the songs back-to-back studio recordings, it's, like, almost 2 hours. All of them are very, very well done. Like, some of them you might not agree. Like, it might not be your favorite song because the styles range, like, they're all over the place, the styles of each song. But you can appreciate how well done they are, both the lyrical content, the musical content, and how they fit together to form kind of the story that is the musical. So we're going to do deep dives on some individual songs and why they're great, and hopefully get into why the musical itself as a, like, a whole package deal is great. I'm going to start with a side rant about Broadway and why I like the music in Hamilton more than some other musicals, even though there are many good musicals on Broadway.
I'm smelling salt. Lay us down the Broadway salt.
This is a complaint you hear a lot about good TV shows, like mediocre TV shows. I love how the songs end when they should. They don't add like a key change or embellishment just for fun where they sing the same words. All of the progressions, even when they do that, where they have a key change, it's for dramatic effect, and they change the words to kind of reflect that. Like, another very popular musical now, Dear Evan Hansen. Great music. I actually really like the music. They do this in, like, several of the songs. Like, we don't need to hear the same words in a new key louder with more people. Like, please add something more than just a key change and, like, more people singing in volume. Somebody's probably going to roast me for that and how there's, like, real musical things going on there, but...
You gotta say it right, how there's real musical things and Scott just doesn't understand.
Yeah, I'm not like a super artsy person, so somebody's probably going to be like, but actually, there's very real reason for them to do this other than like to make it a banger.
Well, Scott, how do you know so much about this musical stuff?
I listen to music. I don't know. I play a lot of instruments. I was a band geek. I took a bunch of music theory. I was a band geek. I'm no longer in band. I'm an adult now, thank you. Adults can't be band nerds. It's impossible.
Wait, nerd or geek? Which is the correct term?
Oh, shit. I think it's band geek. I'm a band geek at heart.
Okay.
So yeah, much more interesting to me, even though we're going to do a couple of dives on some songs and why we like them. Hopefully Diana also has opinions in this matter.
Have you ever known me not to have opinions?
This is true. The songs come together to form a story that is very dramatic, and they use things you'll like, or at least like parallels to things you'll see in like literature, and I'm going to term them musical devices because I don't know the terms for them. One like really cool example that you'll probably read about if you read anything about this is all the characters have like a melody for their name. The most prominent one that I can imagine or that I can think of when I think of this music is Eliza, who is Hamilton's wife.
Spoilers.
They get married. Almost all the times they mention her in inside of a song, they sing her name like Eliza. And it's got like the Eliza. Same. It's got the same like up and down pitch, even though it'll be in different keys, sung by different people at different tempos for different reasons. This is true for many of the main characters in many scenarios. Of course, it's not like every time like, hey, what's up, Eliza? How are you doing? But like, they draw on that. Like, I'm going to flash back to our Steven Universe episode where we talked about this. Each character also has a musical style. Like, you can see this very clearly with the king because he's all stately and he's all humorous, like, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to come and kill you guys, blah, 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 blah.
Send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love.
Yeah. Anyways, that's very clear, and like it's also clear for comedic effect in that case. But if you listen closely, every character has a style like that. Washington has this nice stately singing style that kind of reflects how most people view George Washington. If you listen to kind of one of his prominent songs in the second act, listen to One Last Time. They contrast Hamilton's typical rhythmic style, which is like rapping or talking. It's not like intense rapping, but like his emphasis is mostly in rhythm and getting the words across rather than like flowing beautiful melodies. And so they actually have them singing at the same time in different styles. And Washington's got his emphasis on like, I want to leave the nation in a good state. And Hamilton's like, no, don't go, dude. Everything's gonna fucking suck without you.
Baby, please don't go.
And it's really appropriate that like they take that conflict of people who have different backgrounds and they're using it in... They're contrasting both the different backgrounds and the different ways they're like singing in this song, and they end it with them singing at the same time with the same words. I was gonna say in unison, but like that usually means you're singing the same pitches and they actually do harmony because it's Broadway and you gotta make it fancy.
That's what it says on the door.
Yep, Broadway, gotta make it fancy.
Got it.
Another good contrast, it's basically the exact same thing that I just said, is Aaron Burr, Sir. Like one of the, it's like the third song, I think.
I think it's actually the second. Because it goes Alexander Hamilton and then Aaron Burr, Sir. And there's always this really wonderful pause, and Sir is always said with a much harsher R sound. So that it fits in very neatly with the bird, sir. But it is the second song, sir. I believe.
Yes. I just want to make the, I want to drive home the point that it wasn't just an accident they do this. This is intentional. Aaron Burr, sir, you also have Hamilton's. In this one, he's talking really fast. Like, it makes you feel like he's like a nervous speaker when he's talking to Aaron Burr for the first time. And you get a very nice lyrical contrast where Aaron Burr just tells him, talk less. And then he goes, smile more. And he's actually singing. And both of those play into, like, they don't just introduce you to the character by, like, telling you things. They also introduce you to the character's kind of emotional state and their personality just by how they are singing these songs.
Yeah, you get a wonderful composition that fits, like Scott is saying, in with a lot of the characters individually. So it can be everything down to the differences between Angelica and Eliza, but you were very aware of it when you're kind of like in the depths of like listening and watching and experiencing Hamilton. And it becomes very clear who is talking, the kind of emotion, because you get kind of like speeding up and slowing down of these various themes. And so you just get so much from the theme for one character.
Yeah, and I really appreciate how they carry that theme over and they use all of these like musical devices to drive home points when they change. Because you're so used to things being done the same way, and sometimes they are and sometimes they're not. Or they'll carry over themes from different characters into different parts of the songs.
Yeah, they're not even just the entirety of a song. They're small pieces, snippets that always occur and happen and throughout the entirety of the musical. And they're always there, but they never feel like you're just listening to another interlude or introduction.
Yeah.
It feels like you, this is like what would actually be playing for this character when they walk into the room.
Yeah, and oftentimes they're singing it themselves too. I also really appreciate that they have all these themes, and like there's a nice mix of reusing the same themes for effect, but you're not getting like reprises like you kind of typically get in some musicals.
Yeah.
I actually really hate reprises because most of the time it's just like, here's more singing content.
I think Hamilton has in the neighborhood of four.
But I'm trying to, they like, don't feel the like reprises. Like they feel like a new song that is reusing the same things for same themes or same devices or same like, you know, melodies, chord progressions for effect as to how things are changing in the plot. And not just, I mean, I realize that's what reprises normally are, but normally they feel a lot more shallow than they do in
you
Hamilton.
You could take something like Les Mis, where reprises are essentially at times re-singing the same main piece, but with a different changed chorus, with a different changed like line or two, but for the majority of the part it's essentially the same song. Reprises in Hamilton have this wonderful bit where Scott's right, they are the same melody, they are the same time signature, they are the same rhythm, but that is to convey a cross and reach in emotion and plot, as opposed to literally repeating word for word.
Yes. And like I said, reprises are meant to use the repetition for some effect, but I think Hamilton nails the using it for effect part, which is why I think I enjoy them more than I enjoy most reprises. Let's put it that way. Let's get into some of the bangers off the soundtrack of Hamilton.
Some of the cream of the crop. It's hard to dislike some of these songs, but there are some that are just like,
yes.
So good.
Do you want to go first, Diana? I've been talking a lot here. I need to take a break. Speaking of which,
go upstate.
No, we're not going to cover that one unless you want to.
No, that's cool. I guess I can start with the song that has always been in my top in terms of bangers, and that's probably Guns and Ships, because fun fact, that was the first Hamilton song I listened to. Is I was browsing the sweet YouTubes. And it popped up as like one of the Play Next videos, and it started. And I was like, what is this? I know my roommate has been playing this soundtrack on end for the past couple months. Thank God that boy can sing.
Oh, that's how I got introduced to Hamilton too. I was in the car on the ride home from one of Carter's things, and Connor was like, you want to listen to Hamilton? I'm like, sure.
Yep. It's all Connor. It's all Connor, guys. That's how we found out about Hamilton. Thank you, Connor. You were singing it for 2 months. We finally listened. You did it. Congratulations.
Everything comes through Connor.
Thank God that boy can sing, because otherwise it would just be all around the apartment.
Oh, geez. Every time album came out, he'd sing it in the shower.
I love that boy, but oh my God. And so this had popped up on YouTube, and I was listening to it, and it was so, I won't say off-putting, but it was so throwing in the sense that I was like, this is the musical about Alexander Hamilton that Connor has been talking about? Because this, I think Guns and Ships really is some of the best rhythmic, lyrical rapping. And it really all encompasses all some of those best bits in this song, in that it's upbeat, it's fun, it's understandable, it's just a really well done song. And it was a really great introduction song into the Hamilton world. And I think it's probably gonna always be one of my favorites. But I know that there's one song that Scott and I both love that is the closest second, and I love almost all versions of this song, including the mixtape version with Usher. And normally I'm not a big Usher person, but Wait For It. Wait For It is, I'm looking at my water bottle. There is a Wait For It sticker with lyrics from this song on it. It is one of my favorite songs, not just in Hamilton, but overall.
All right, I can go into why. This I listed in my notes, top in my category of bangers for Wait For It. It's a really great song, and I wanted to touch just a little bit before I get into why I like this song in particular on Hamilton's music. If you're like a Broadway purist and you're kind of like a musical purist, it's a very different style of music. Like, there's both a wide range of music, but some of it, my roommate is a classical musician kind of purist. He likes Broadway stuff, but he's like not super big into Hamilton because he says, and I'm not gonna roast him live on air. We're gonna forget
Do
that.
Do it.
No. I think we need the quote now.
If you start the roast, you must continue for the 4 hours.
I'm pulling the roast out of the oven.
Carter literally roasted his mother last episode.
Oh God, I gotta hear that one. I'm pulling the roast out of the oven. Going back to why Wait For It is top in the category of great songs from Hamilton. One of the things that I think is underappreciated about music is this song has very nice dynamic range. So like you start off very quiet. He's basically like whispering, not really whispering. He's singing very quiet, very rhythmically. The melody is actually not super interesting. It's like three notes over and over again. It's very catchy and repetitive, and I like that part about it. And the rhythms like really work out with the kind of flowing syllables that you would get typical of somebody who's really great at writing lyrics. Anyways, it also has your typical loud Broadway section kind of at the very end, where everybody's singing along and being all dramatic. What I appreciate specifically is they use and adjust the repetition rhythm dynamics to emphasize and build on points, not just to like make a good song, right? It's not like singer-songwriter, let's make the next song of the century. We keep kind of the same melody and theme, but they build on it and change the lyrics as well. So you get enough change in it that it keeps the song interesting. And you can use, like, they use that to build up the effect, and you can feel the realizations that the characters come to, in this case, Aaron Burr, as the kind of choruses and verses build in intensity, to that they really drive home what the importance of the ordering is. So Burr starts off, "Everyone who loves me has died." Very sad song at the beginning.
You also realize that Burr has lived a rough life at some point.
Yes,
like,
we're going to get to that later.
Yeah.
And the first kind of chorus is "Love doesn't discriminate, blah, 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 blah." They repeat the same structure, gets more intense. "Death doesn't discriminate," so on and so forth. It's building up both like his character and like Diana said, like everything is terrible in Burr's life about this point. You hear from this song, but you feel like he's realizing that like things are unfair in my life, but he's building up different points in his head. And it's interesting that the last one is that life doesn't discriminate, like things are unfair. He's going to deal with it. And that's kind of the last point he's driving home, and that why he's going to wait for something to happen.
Yeah. And I think this song has a lot of power to it as the contrast for Hamilton's music, which is, "I'm not going to miss my shot. I'm going to take every single chance I can." Where in this song, you get a lot of Burr saying, "That's not me. And I'm not just, you know, I'm not just doing nothing. This is how I cope with the things in my life."
Yeah, exactly. It really shows their different styles in getting things done. And it gives you a lot of empathy for the Burr character, even though like he presents himself at the very beginning of the musical as the damn fool that shoots Hamilton. So he's kind of already the quote bad guy. But, you know, they're going to build empathy for you.
Spoiler alert.
Hamilton dies.
They all die.
Everybody
Spoilers.
Dies.
Spoilers.
The last point I want to drive home about the song is it doesn't stay too long. They use all this, like, repetition and emphasis and growing, and then it's over. they don't like repeat it again in a key change just for fun, which I really appreciated.
All the songs, they know when to leave on top. And so you aren't left in the second half of the musical, because a lot of some of the songs that we are talking about are in the first half where you get a lot of powerhouse songs. Mm-hmm. But they know when to stop. They know when to not continuously bring up this song and beat it to death. And so by the end of the second act, you're like, well, I used to like this song.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Do you want to do another song? I have another song I want to do a good review of, song that I really like.
I mean, I love hearing like what songs you guys like, because like I've listened to a little bit of, I take that back, I've listened to a lot of Hamilton, but like not as much as most people have. Like I couldn't tell you what most of the songs are called, and I'd probably be like, oh yeah, I've heard that one once you start actually saying the words to it. I'm like, ah, yeah, I remember that. But like normally I just listen to it and it's like, I like this because it sounds nice. But then like hearing people be like, all right, this is exactly what I like about it, and this is why it's different than other things that are similar that I normally don't like. It's like, oh, that makes much more sense now. I've never looked at it that way.
One more song that I want to talk about before Scott goes into another one of... I love... they're all my children. I love them all right? The song Satisfied is also one of my most favorite songs. I've heard a couple different versions of it, and I know it is one of the big ones that everybody talks about, but I think the message that it conveys and the character growth that it gives what could have been a side character or a character that could have been easily misinterpreted as non-complex, which is the character of Angelica Schuyler, is really well done. Not to mention, it incorporates almost so many of the lyrical, almost all of the lyrical themes of the Hamilton. You get the rhythmic hardcore rapping that you have when she's talking about Hamilton, which messes really well with him. She has a lot of the kind of burr, start quiet, build strong, build loud. But at the same time, she also has a lot of grandioso and lyricalness to her music that just kind of flows back and forth through the song. And so this song is really well done. And the original actress, whose name is escaping me at the moment, who played Angelica, really pulled in so much emotion and so much meaning into a song that could have made a character who was seen as, oh, jealous sister, into a character who's like, no, I put my family first, even at the expense of myself. In a self-sacrificing kind of way that plays off of a lot of characters who don't do that. And it stands out as one of the few songs that has a fully female main role for. It shows a lot of contrast to the other male characters who are often sacrificing but not for themselves, it seems like. Whereas this one is very sacrifice for the greatness of others, even if it counts against me. And I think that's just a really wonderful kind of layer to have on to an already amazing song.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the most, like, it's got so many moving parts in it, and you can tell it's like a very well-polished song, how it all fits together. Not one of my favorites, but it's a good song, just not one of my favorites. I'll leave it there. I'm probably going to get roasted by somebody who listens to this podcast for saying it's not my favorite
again,
song.
We like all the songs, even if we don't like some as many as others.
Yes. The last song that I wanted to talk about in my kind of analysis way is Burn. Very sad song, second act. Hamilton, you know, spoiler alert again, cheats on his wife Eliza. Very sad. Also spoiler alert, he writes a paper about it.
Like, walk with me for a moment. Walk with me down this story and like take this story out of context to really appreciate it. Not only did you cheat on your devoted, loving wife who you supported you through war and children, because childbirth back at that time was not easy. Like, you were pretty much almost guaranteed to die most times. You cheat on her while she's on vacay with her family, in her home, in her bed. You don't even go to a hotel. You don't even have the decency to do that. And then, you write an entire paper about it, publish it everywhere, which he essentially posted it on his Facebook wall, and then you're like, I had to do it. I had to do it because otherwise they would have thought bad of me.
Yes. Very shitty moment in this musical where Hamilton's kind of a good guy. I don't know. It paints him in a positive light sometimes. This is not a positive light for Hamilton.
He's a very Shakespearean hero in that he has a lot of buildup in the first act, but he has faults and falls in other acts that really round him out as a character.
Yes. Anyways, I think this song, very tragic. There are a lot of sad songs, especially the second act or the second half of this musical. I wanted to point out why I think the song is, I'm not going to say the saddest song. People will disagree with me, so I don't really care. The progression of this song really gives you an idea of what Eliza is thinking at the time. It's a progression of time, and you can see the progression of her thoughts, which I think is really interesting and why I think the song is also really well done. She starts off, "I saved every letter you wrote to me from the moment I read them, I knew you were mine." She's talking, obviously reflecting on how did shit get so fucked up that my husband would cheat on me and then write a paper about it. You know, she goes on and says, like, "Your sentences left me defenseless, blah, 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 blah." She's trying to take blame off herself because she is blaming herself for what happened. She's saying, like, "There's no way I could have done anything about this. You hypnotized me with your words." And she goes on, "I'm rereading the letters you wrote to me, searching and scanning for answers." This is very clearly like, why did this happen? Why did I not see this coming? Which is not something you, this is not an angry response. This is like, this is my fault. How do I make this better? Which is, you know, not an appropriate response.
Yeah, she's going through like stages of grief throughout the song.
We have some chorus going on and so forth. And she's slowly coming to the realization that this is like not an okay thing. And this is not her fault, to the point where she finally realized that you and your words obsessed with your legacy, your sentences border on senseless, and you're paranoid, blah, 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 blah. And there's this kind of breaking moment in the song where she just says, you, and kind of pauses. And it's like, okay, there's a realization happening here that what happened is not okay. It's also not my fault. And I'm getting the fuck out of here. And it even builds even more on that to, I'm getting out of here, which I'm erasing myself from the narrative. You've torn it all apart. The world has no right to my heart, so on and so forth. This is, I'm getting out of here. And then it shifts at the very, very end to like, this is not me leaving. This is you throwing everything away. This is your fault. And I hope you know that it is your fault. Last line, "I hope that you burn," kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah. It's a really powerful song that gives a lot of agency to a character who previously didn't seem to have agency in her life, but did not seem to be quite the mover and shaker, especially when you're looking at her sister, who seems to be, as she like says, the wittier one. And so it's really wonderful to have this song be very sad, but at the same time empowering, because you see, as Scott was saying, this realization, and the realization that unlike how many would have viewed it in the time, it is not her fault. It is not her fault for how everything has come crashing and burning down.
And they really need this to set her up as like, her character is like a very, like a positive person. She's very supportive of Hamilton, especially in the first act through everything he's going through. And spoiler alert, eventually in the end, they resolve this somewhat amicably. But it's really important that they show like, she actually grows through this and realizes that like, she's not a pushover. She can do things her way, and she becomes like, she gains some independence here, which is important to like realize that when shit happens later in the play, many more spoilers, and they're like, you know, they resolve things. It's not because she is like a weak person.
Yeah, it's the song in which they talk about resolving things. It's quiet uptown?
It's quiet uptown.
Uptown. Thank you.
I thought you were saying the song is quiet.
And what I actually really appreciate about that song is because it shows a passage of time without saying, "Hey, you want to know how many minutes have passed? Well, we can tell you." Cough, cough, Rent. It's showing a passage of time, and it's showing an eventual level of, maybe not as close as they were before, but she is coming to terms with everything that's happened, and she is choosing to forgive him on her own terms. Yes. And a lot of that is built up with the power, the utter power of this song. On stage, she literally lights this thing on fire, man. She is not playing around with fake stuff. They light it on fire. You know how serious this is, my dude.
Yes. So all the sad things you mentioned, I just want to briefly touch on the overall story as brought through the just through the music. Diana will give you the non-musical bits after that. My takeaway is there are no winners in the world of Hamilton. Everybody has bad shit that happens to them. People are not presented as perfect. Washington is probably the best off, but he takes it in a very humble fashion, which is good. We got to keep our perfect view of George Washington, our Lord and Savior of America.
You're not supposed to... His name is too holy for you to say. Have you done the rites?
Yes. You have, like, Hamilton, who in the first act is like, you know, you're, like, really behind him. He's coming up from nothing. He's doing everything. The second act, he makes a lot of fucking mistakes. He's got a rough time going for him.
A lot of mistakes that are mostly, like, his fault. Not, like, happened to him. But, like, Hamilton, you dumb. You shouldn't have done this.
Yes. And other than that, he also just has conflicts that he has to resolve. So, fun. Anyways, Burr, who could be easily portrayed as the villain in this, that he's always, especially in the way they portray him in Hamilton the musical, always coming to confrontations with Hamilton, you realize he has valid strategies, he has valid opinions, and if you listen to the second to last song, they really portray him as a character who doesn't have everything figured out. He's not like your typical arrogant villain. He's trying to succeed in his own way, and it just so happens that Hamilton keeps getting in his fucking way. And he comes to the realization, or at least they make you see this through the song, that, like, maybe him and Hamilton could have been friends. They actually do a lot of things similarly, it's just they were on opposite sides of the fight.
Yeah. So, honestly, having now listened to the musical and the CD set several times and having watched it, this is not to say that you should not, if you have the ability... which, by the way, rush tickets are a thing. The Hamilton tickets are expensive, but if you're in a major city, go for the rush tickets. They're usually like $10, if you can get it. Just, you'd be surprised. Most people do not know and do not put in for it. Just give it a go. This is not saying don't go see it, but a lot of the story, because it is a musical, is encapsulated in the music, which you can buy on the CD. There are small scenes, small tidbits here and there, but there's nothing that really changes. Like, it adds, like, nice more character, but essentially almost everything happens encapsulated in music. So if you have discovered in your life that you don't live near a major city to get rush tickets, or you can't shell out the expense to go get Hamilton tickets, which is totally understandable, then know that you are not missing deep emotional bits and bobs that would change your life. I got Hamilton tickets because they were a gift that had been saved up for major event. And so I got lucky in the chance that I got a chance to go see it down in DC here at the Ronald Reagan? No, JFK? One of those. There's a center. I'll be honest, I was more focused on the musical. Cared a little less about the center. It'll come to me. I'm forgetful. Don't judge.
We'll edit out your forgetfulness. Don't worry.
I went to see it while it was in DC, and it was honestly just wonderful. It was everything I was hoping it would be. It was just a really wonderful experience to have the visual to match with the music I had been listening to so much, especially since the recordings on the CD are with the original cast, with Mr. Lin himself, as opposed to the current running cast. And so, oh God, it's just really well done, even as a piece of theater art. You have one set and a lot of smaller moving props and pieces, which, by the way, hand it off to the ensemble, guys. Hand it off to the ensemble. They do so much work in this musical. They are constantly moving, constantly dancing, constantly rearranging, constantly assisting. They are always in motion when they are out on the stage because they are in costume change, this, that. Like, the ensemble cast does so much in this musical, and you don't realize it sometimes because you're mostly focused on the characters, but if you look away for a hot second, you will see how much they are setting up the main cast there. They do so much. And so, one of the wonderful things about this musical that has made it quite the hot commodity, other than its just musical prowess, is that their casting choices are not based on looks. George Washington was known to be a very tall man. I've seen him cast as a short man. They do not cast based on appearances, based on looks, which means that you will have people portraying white people and they're not white. And that's been a very big, I won't say uproar, but that has been a very big beloved part of Hamilton, is that so many musicals cast based on a look. They want you to look like a certain character, and this is one of the few that just doesn't. They just go with the literal best that they can find for this role. And so that is one of the really wonderful things, especially since the original cast, including Mr. Lin himself, are the hottest commodities. Hottest commodities in town. Like, when they were still running the original one with all of them in New York, you could sacrifice 3 of your children and still not get a ticket. Oh lordy, it was not possible. Even now, the entirety of the original cast is really popular. They're showing up in all sorts of things. The guy who played originally Aaron Burr has showed up in cartoon We Bare Bears. Most of the OG ensemble cast, along with a lot of the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Nobody knows, Diana.
Give me a second. Understudies. Thank you. I just needed a hot second, excuse you. A lot of the understudies and a lot of the ensemble original cast showed up in an episode of Odd Mom Out, which was a Bravo TV series. They are, even after this play, they are all just the hottest tickets in town. Everybody wants them. And so, like, there's so much done, and that's why it's so wonderful to see it and not... If you get the opportunity, it's wonderful because you see how much work this ensemble cast is doing in addition to the characters and how they're moving and interacting throughout the set. In particular, the way that they portray the bullet in the final duel between Burr and Hamilton. We've already said spoilers 8 times, but I swear to God, if I get a message saying, "Oh my God, you ruined Hamilton for me," I may weep because we got a message, but also I'll still weep. The way that they portray the final duel is they essentially have one of the ensemble cast holding the bullet and showing it going through like these microseconds of time as it speeds toward Hamilton. And you just see this wonderful time slowing movement because the set is done really well where it has a rotating piece that incorporates a lot of things. And it's just, it's such a complete put together scene and moment in the musical that really encapsulates how much is done by the physical cast who is there. So if you get a chance to see it, pay really well attention to that because it is a really wonderful piece of theater, honestly. The costumes are beautiful and wonderful. They just look good on everyone. I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. If I could pull off that Washington coat, I totally would. But also, fun fact, Mr. Lin himself is actually besties with the McElroy brothers. If you guys have ever listened to The Adventure Zone or Mabim Bam, My Brother and My Brother and Me, Sawbones, wonderful, they have all sorts of things. Mr. Lin is actually besties with them. He's gotten them onto a red carpet before. He's been on their TV show. He also wrote 2 references into Hamilton from the McElroy brothers. Like, I did not know that until Carter pointed it out, and I thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah. Also, one of my favorite lines in the entire musical, do whatever you want, I'm super dead, is apparently a McElroy reference, and like, I can't stand this anymore, so I'm removing it from my list of favorite things.
Yeah, I love it. I love that, like, listening to Carter tell Scott that and just experiencing that at the same time was one of the best gifts I could have ever been given.
Yes.
Scott brings up a great point. We got some favorite quotes for you guys. Favorite line. All sorts of favorite things about this because, like we said, everything is wonderful, but there are some like prime top tier wonderful lines in this, which, as Scott said, do whatever you want, I'm super dead. Which one does that come in from again?
Cabinet battle number 2. It's King Louis's head.
Oh, that's right. Woo. That was a good one.
Should we honor our Treaty King Louis's head? Do whatever you want. I'm super dead.
That's such a quality line. That, and like, there's so much humor in this. One of my other favorite lines from Right Hand Man, they're in the middle of a battle and they're like, oh man, everybody's abandoning him. And he's like, let's take a stand with the stamina God has granted us. Hamilton won't abandon ship. Yo, let's steal their cannons. And like, you just have this wonderful moment where you see Hamilton and someone else go steal their cannons, and it's hilarious at the thought that this guy is just turns to his friend in the middle of the battle and is like, bruh, let's steal their cannons.
I mean, to be fair, wild. That's an amazing amount of just like, you know what, fuck this, I'm gonna do the thing, and I full-heartedly support that mindset.
I love it.
All right, the only other favorite quote I have of this musical is roasting vice presidents, which is John Adams doesn't have a real job anyway.
Ooh.
There's also some good John Adams roasting that you can listen to if you should listen to the musical.
Yeah, actually, if you go out and get the mixtape, which you should, Hamilton mixtape is a wonderful addition. It's got a couple of cuts of songs that Lynn didn't end up putting, I'm calling him Lynn as if we're best friends, so just go with it, didn't end up putting in the final cut for Hamilton because of either time or how it flowed. And so one of them is a riff on John Adams, and it's wonderful. A few of them are remixes curated and or written by Lynn and other artists based on the music. So definitely go look into those because the roast of John Adams is real, live, and lovely. I love it. I love it so much. Another one of my particular favorite quotes, and this is actually the one I have a sticker of on my water bottle. It is, "I am the one thing in life I can control. I am inimitable. I am an original." And that's one of the best lines from Wait For It. It's just one of the best lines ever. It's such a good song.
All right. I think we're done here.
Yeah.
We've peaked.
Let's leave now while we know we're
we'll leave ahead. On a high note, just like Wait For It.
I honestly feel like I learned so much about Hamilton having not seen it, like, in person or, like, seen YouTube videos of it. All I've literally done is listen to the music. I feel like I've actually learned quite a bit about it just now.
That's unfortunate. This is not meant to be an informative podcast.
Wait, what? I thought you guys were supposed to be
experts. we didn't put informational in the iTunes tags. We can only make jokes here, Ian.
Ooh, we gotta scrap all of this, guys.
God damn it,
we gotta start over.
I've got shit to do. I can't re-record everything here.
Wait, we were recording this?
Oh, I'm recording Scott. Who are you recording?
Oh, no, we're not making
Scott,
this
you brought this
again.
Upon yourself.
Cancel,
you
abort.
This upon yourself.
Fuck, I know. All right. Take us out, Ian.
Scott, you're way too far away, but next time we're together, I'll take you out.
Ian treats his ladies nice. Just ask Connor.
Hey, I've taken you out too, so don't even.
I know. That's why I'm saying.
All right. Anyways. So, you know, if you like what you hear, or if you don't like what you hear, and you just like listening to things that you don't like, weird, you can find us on Facebook and Tumblr at Brought to the Table. And you can also find us at Twitter at To the Table Pod. I don't know. I'm not a Twitter person. I don't do the tweet thing.
It's at To the Table
Pod. Tweet at us if you hated this, or you hate Hamilton, or you love Hamilton, or you love Dear Evan Hansen.
See, I'm the old guy on the podcast who doesn't understand, like, half of this new, like, technology stuff.
Tweet us all your fan fiction. We know the Hamilton and Lawrence fiction life is alive.
So, you know, like they just said, feel free to submit your own things to Brought to the Table. You can email us at broughttothetable@gmail.com and, you know, just tell us, hey, I like this. I didn't like this. You all are a bunch of assholes. Clearly, this is the best song on Hamilton. Or if you have ideas of like, hey, I want to get your all's opinions, or I want to hear you all ramble on for like an hour and a half about this meaningless thing or this thing that I'm interested in, email us, drop us a line. Also, if you have the time, please just leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leaving reviews, it helps us show up a little bit better and makes it seem like, hey, we actually might kind of know what we're talking about. Please help us lie about this sort of stuff. It's awesome, and it'd be great of you. Anyways, thanks for coming to our table. Catch you all later.
Bye.
Bye.